Good day, and welcome to today's Bring Back Marco conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Maria Elena Encarnación.
Thank you so much, Carolina, and thanks everyone for joining us on today's call. My name is Maria Elena Encapié. I'm the Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center, and we are so proud to stand with our courageous plaintiffs, Marco Villada and Israel Cerrato, who have bravely chosen to fight an unfair and unlawful decision that has separated them. It is an honor to represent Marco and Israel, along with our co-counsel at the law offices of Stacy Tolton and the law firm of Mayer Brown, LLP, and to be joined on this call today by our partners at Human Rights Campaign and the California Immigrant Youth Justice Alliance. Marco and Israel, first of all, we at the National Immigration Law Center and our co-counsel say to you that we are so grateful for the opportunity to fight along your side. We have a stellar lineup of speakers today, so let me introduce everybody on the line. First, we have our brave plaintiffs. Both Marco and Israel are with us on the call today. Marco is joining from Mexico, and Israel is joining from Los Angeles. We'll also hear from our co-counsel, Andy Pincus, who is a partner at Mayer Brown, and Stacy Tolton, who heads up the law offices of Stacy Tolton. And we have Sarah Warbello, legal director at Human Rights Campaign, and Chriselle Rodriguez, the Southern California regional coordinator of CEJA, the California Immigrant Youth Justice Alliance. Before I turn it over to them, though, let me just share a little bit about why this case is so important. Marco and Israel's story is an example of how our immigration system is failing families and failing our country. Their case shows the impact of Washington's failure to find a solution for Dreamers, for DACA recipients. Marco would not be stuck in Mexico today if Donald Trump had stuck to his promise and worked with Congress to find a solution for Dreamers by now. Immigrant youth like Marco are inextricable part of our communities. Marco is a loving spouse, a model employee, a brother to an active duty military member, and a vibrant member of the LGBTQ community. As Marco and Israel's case shows, our anti-immigrant policies don't just hurt immigrants, they hurt all of us. Their story is an American story. Their fight is our fight for all of us. This case is pretty simple and straightforward. At its core, our lawsuit is about the ability for people like Marco and Israel to live with their families and loved ones. Without further ado, I'd like to turn it over first to Marco Villada, who will tell us more about what he and Israel are going through. Marco?
Yeah, hi everyone. This is Marco. Both Israel and I are going through a tough time. I mean, we've been together for a very long time. And my husband Israel and I got married 6 months after the Supreme Court made it possible for us to get married. You know, we're both, you know, Americans in my eye. Both Israel and I grew up in California. Israel as a U.S. citizen, and I've had DACA since 2013. You know, after we got married, we realized that in order to fulfill our dreams of a permanent future care, I needed more secure immigration status. So we started the process of applying for a spouse visa for me. I mean, we apply for a waiver that allows people in situations like mine to travel to the country of birth, in my case, you know, Mexico. In January, we were granted, you know, the waiver. Both of us traveled to the U.S. consulate in Ciudad Juarez for my interview. We did everything by the book. We thought that since we had the waiver, nothing could go wrong, but that wasn't the case. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way. The consular official who interviewed me in Ciudad Juarez came back answering, saying that my visa was denied and barred, and I was barred from the U.S. for at least 10 years. I mean, right now, all I could think about is going back home every day, every moment that happens. That's all I do. I miss my husband. I miss my home, my family, and both Israel and I are going through a really tough time right now, and all we ask is that the consular, the court, the correct people make the correct decision, overturn this decision, and get me back home.
Thank you, Marco. Thank you for your courage and for allowing us to fight with you. You are on the right side of justice, and your courage will allow us to help bring you back. Israel, if you can share your story, to share a little bit about how this is impacting you.
So hello. My name is Israel Serrato. I love my husband. I love my husband before he had DACA. I love my husband as a documented person. And I'm going to fight for our right to be together now. My husband Marco and I went into this process thinking that we were doing everything right. We filed all the right papers, took all the right steps to secure our future. But shortly after, when we got to Juarez, and we found out that Marco was being shut out of the United States, my heart shattered. It's one of our deepest fears came true. Marco is now stuck in the wrong country, away from me, away from the rest of our family, friends. He's barred from the place where he grew up, where we've built a life, unable to continue his job, and everything he does for our community. His absence is devastating for me, and even though he's strong, I know that he's suffering. My husband is my partner, my best friend. Being separated has flipped our lives upside down, and it's forced us to make a lot of hard choices. With Marco stuck in Mexico, I had to sell off our furniture, move in with a friend. I simply couldn't afford to cover our rent and the rest of our financial obligations by myself. The place where we called home, where we built so many memories, it's gone. This isn't just hard on us, it's impacting our family, coworkers, just so many people in our lives. But despite all of this, we both remain hopeful that our government is going to do the right thing, and he's going to be home soon, where he belongs. One of the things that made this situation so difficult is feeling like we had no say in the way things played out for our family. We went through all the necessary steps and somehow still ended up in this nightmare. But we're not going to stand down in the face of injustice. Both my husband and I grew up here. Our roots, our families, our friends, our lives are here in the United States. We are suing because we know Marco has been unfairly exiled, and we will do everything in our power to bring him home.
Thank you, Israel. Thank you for your courage as well. All I can say is on behalf of our federal government, apologize to you both for how you have been wronged. And fortunately, we have an incredible legal team fighting for both of you, and incredible movement partners who are joining us today. Let's move on to our next speaker, Andy Pincus, who is a partner at Mayer Brown, who will talk about the legal claims in our lawsuit. Andy? We may not have Andy on the phone because he's on a train, so I'm going to move on to Stacey Tolton, who will speak about the state of immigration law and the pattern of how this has happened.
Great. Thank you, Marilena. So what happened in this case is that Marco applied for what we call a provisional waiver, and Andy can talk a little bit more about the claims that are raised. But a provisional waiver allows somebody who can't apply for a immigrant visa or a green card in the U.S. to leave and apply at a consulate. And once you leave the U.S., normally there's a bar to coming back in for 10 years, but there's a waiver available if you can show extreme hardship to a spouse or a parent who is a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident. And so the regulations now allow somebody to apply for that waiver in the U.S., and then once it's approved, you would go back to your home country for a short, 2-week max, 3-week max, trip, and then come back with your immigrant visa and get your green card. But the problem in this case is that the provisional waiver applies to only the ground of leaving for that interview. And so in Marco's case, the Department of State determined that there were other grounds of what we call inadmissibility or bars to him returning to the U.S. And this is a problem that we're seeing that's been very frequent since the change in administrations, where people get the approval from USCIS that they've qualified for this extreme hardship waiver, but then they go out to go to the interview with the Department of State and are found to be inadmissible for other reasons, and then they're barred, right? And so in Marco's case, he's actually barred permanently according to the finding from Department of State, and he's available to apply for a waiver after 10 years. Now, we absolutely disagree with the analysis in this case, but this is part of a larger problem. And so when people are all talking about, you know, how easy it is for DACA recipients to apply for visas or for green cards, this really shows how complicated the problem is. And it's not just Marco that's caught up in this trap. There's many other people that are caught outside of the U.S. with family members and loved ones in the U.S. who got these waivers approved and now are stuck.
Thank you so much, Stacey. And I believe that Andy is back with us. Andy?
Yes.
Great.
So I just picking up on what Stacey said, I think it's important to point out right at the outset, we think we have very strong arguments, and I apologize, I'm on a train, very strong arguments that the grounds cited by the government are just plain wrong. As Stacey said, one of them, they both violate the language of the provisions that the government is relying on makes clear, for example, that time in the U.S. as a minor doesn't count for unlawful presence, yet the government relied on that statute. Similarly, as the complaint spells out in detail, when Marco returned from visiting his grandmother after the death of his grandfather, he was admitted through the regular process by an immigration officer, and therefore he did not enter the country impermissibly. So for that reason, we think the legal arguments are strong. The government is going to try and argue that the courts have no role to play in reviewing its justifications. In other words, even the government says, even if we're wrong, too bad, you don't have any remedy in court. But the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which oversees Los Angeles, where we filed this case, has rejected that argument, and we think we have a very strong case given both of our clients' ties to the United States that this is a situation in which the courts will and must intervene to correct this injustice.
Thank you so much, Andy. And our next speaker is Sarah Warbelow, the legal director of the Human Rights Campaign, who, as you all know, HRC has played a leadership role in helping Marco and Israel be able to get married, along with so many other people in the country. Sarah?
Thank you so much. Marco's story is not an anomaly. Hundreds of thousands of individuals who are part of the complex fabric of our society have had or are at risk of having similar experiences. Immigrant rights are an LGBTQ issue. More than 75,000 Dreamers identify as LGBTQ, and over 36,000 of them have benefited from DACA. For these young people, the threat of deportation can hold an additional element of uncertainty, since they could be deported to countries with poor LGBTQ human rights records. Many of these young Dreamers can find themselves in countries where they have little to no legal rights and are more likely to experience anti-LGBTQ violence and possibly death. Nearly 80 countries criminalize same-sex relationships, and many, without explicit laws, remain very dangerous for people in the LGBTQ community. In countries like El Salvador, transgender women have faced such a tremendous upsurge in violence that the United Nations recently called for an investigation into the situation. The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights reported that nearly 600 people died from anti-LGBTQ violence in Latin America between January 2013 and March of 2014 alone. And those are just the cases that we know of. The Human Rights Campaign has made passing a Clean Dream Act one priorities. We are engaged with multiple organizations on this issue to highlight the feature the stories of LGBTQ immigrants and how their lives intersect with public policy. We've also shown a focus on non-Latinx people because the Dreamer community is so diverse. This situation is untenable and unjust. We must do better as a country.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And our next and final speaker before we open it up for questions is Chriselle Rodriguez, who is the Southern California Regional Coordinator of CEJA and one of our immigrant youth leaders in California. Chriselle?
Hello, all. Just wanted to mention that CJA is a statewide immigrant youth-led organization that seeks to eradicate deportation, private detention, mass incarceration, and the criminalization of immigrants. CJA stands in solidarity and unity with Marco and his family. Marco's case is an example of how the Trump administration's politics continue to tear families apart. This administration continues to target immigrants on all fronts, and we have a president that chooses to attack and tweet about undocumented youth and fails to provide actual solutions that can keep families and communities safe. Even as the lawyers have mentioned, Marco has done right in going through the motions of adjusting his status and following the recommendations of the U.S. government to come back home. He's barred from reentering, and this is baffling, and it is an injustice. And even as Marco's brother is serving as a military member in what this country considers to be the highest of service, these reckless anti-immigrant policies are keeping Marco away from his brother, his spouse, his loved ones, and the community that saw him grow. As a result, we have a distraught family and community that's separated by the politics of Washington. We have a mother, a spouse, and a brother who are living with uncertainty and fear for Marco's future. Marco's place is here in California, and the U.S. government needs to do right by this family and needs to bring Marco back. We need to bring Marco back, and we will continue fighting to ensure that this happens.
Thank you so much, Chriselle. And with that, we will open it up for questions. So, operator, if you can please give people the instructions.
And if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, that's star and one to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. And your first question comes from Elliot Spagat with Associate Press. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm just seeking a little bit of clarity on these provisional waivers and what they mean. If I understand, and I probably didn't understand, USCIS is basically saying, you know, don't worry, you'll get your visa, you'll be allowed to come back right away, you won't have to wait for 10 years in Mexico. I just want to make sure I'm understanding that provisional waiver seems to be the basis of this lawsuit. And also, if you could, if Stacey can elaborate anyway on how common it has become. I know you said very frequent. Last question, if I could just squeeze it in. If Marco, the post story said he had received DACA status in 2013, just wondering if that is still current. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great questions, Elliot. Thank you. Stacey, you want to answer the question about the provisional waiver first?
Sure. So the provisional waiver legally applies only to this departure associated with going to the interview at the consulate. But the problem is that, understandably, when people get an approval, they think that they're clear. And so it's just a boilerplate approval that says, okay, you've demonstrated extreme hardship, you qualify for this waiver. And so frequently what happens is when somebody gets the waiver approved, they go to the consulate, and then other questions are asked, and then the consular official may make a determination that there's other bars that apply. But in a case like Marco's, it's really important to know that Marco disclosed everything that was relevant to determining whether or not he was eligible to come back to the U.S. And so even though this waiver was approved, USCIS was on notice that if they were going to apply what we call this permanent bar, all of his departures and reentries were there. And so it was all before the agency, yet the waiver was approved, and then he's sent out, and then he's basically trapped. And so this is the problem, is people get the waiver approved, they assume that the U.S. government has approved them to return, they go outside, and there's a different agency, the Department of State, doing a new determination. And so what we're seeing, I don't know the numbers, and it would be very interesting for somebody to perhaps do a Freedom of Information Act to look this up, but in the past 6 months, we've gotten frequent calls. I would say probably about 6 calls just in my office, but I know this is happening across the board, of people that got these waivers approved and then were barred by the Department of State, either for their entries and exits, just as what happened in Marco's case, or they'll ask additional questions such as, you know, how did your children come to the U.S. when they were 4? And if they say, you know, how did somebody help me bring them here, then the person is barred for what we call alien smuggling. Right, and so that's happening more and more. There's also concerns about people being accused of being a public charge and not being allowed in. And so even though this waiver, the provisional waiver, only applies to the departure, it's very confusing for people who are caught in this really, you know, incredibly complicated process to understand all of the various things that can apply to them. And because they don't, they're going to end up stuck outside of the U.S.
Thank you, Stacey. And Elliot's last question about Marco's DACA is unfortunately, because he left the country under this waiver, has been terminated. So that is in part, and that is part, obviously, what we're trying to address through the lawsuit as well. Next question, Carolina.
Thank you. And your next question comes from Salvador Duran with Univision. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. So I got two questions. The first one is this the first time that a lawsuit of this nature is filed? Because we know that there's been many, many families in the past that have gone to this particular point of entry in Ciudad Juarez, and a lot of families have been torn apart because they go to this particular consulate office and they get denied, precisely because of the reasons that you're mentioning. So is this the very first lawsuit of this nature that we're seeing here in the United States? And the second part of my question is, what will be the most difficult thing for you to do to try to get Marco back into the United States as you're going through the legal process?
Great. Stacey, do you want to take that first question?
Sure. You know, I mean, I can tell you it's not the first suit just because I actually had one as well. This was under the prior administration. And I know it's not the first suit. I mean, what happens is that the Department of State issues these decisions. They tell you what law is applied, but they don't tell you the facts. And from the Department of State's perspective, they're immune from review. And so that's a lot of what this fight is about. But I did have a case, just to give you an example, about a year and a half ago, where the Department of State said the client was barred from returning because he had been issued an order of removal at the border and then had come in illegally. And he said, that's not true. It never happened to me. And we went to the Customs and Border Protection Customs and Border Patrol and asked them for proof, and they said, oh, no, there's no expedited removal order. We went back to Department of State, and they said, nope, you're barred. So we did file a lawsuit, and that was fixed after the lawsuit was filed. And I think that's sort of the point of this case as well, is that it's so complicated and it's so difficult to fight against these agencies who believe that they really are not subject to true transparency or review. And so by going to federal court, that's really our own option, our only option to make sure that there's a fair process.
And Salvador, I think this is Marilena. I would just add, I think in terms of the most challenging thing, I would say two things, right? At the most basic level, the most challenging thing is for Marco and for Israel, right, in terms of their separation and the impact that being separated is having on their families and their own well-being. And then second is, you know, as Stacey mentioned, there have been other cases under the previous administration. I think there's a big question mark about how this administration that is clearly so anti-immigrant in both its rhetoric and its policies, how they will respond to this lawsuit. I mean, we're hoping that it can get resolved quickly and we can get Marco back home as soon as possible, because that is the goal. Next question, operator. Oh, sorry, somebody else going to add something? Nope, go ahead, sorry.
And your next question comes from Michael Lavers with the Washington Blade. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you so much for the call today. I have a couple of questions, actually. The first, I just want, for the lawyers on the call, are you able to clarify the specific grounds upon which Marco was denied entry into the U.S.? And then I'm curious to hear from Marco. I've covered anti-LGBT violence in Latin America extensively, and I'm just curious to know how you're being treated in Juarez right now as somebody who's openly gay and in your situation. Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Michael. Let's start with Marco's answer first. Marco, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, hi, first of all. I'm no longer in Juarez. I left there. I was there only for a couple of weeks in the beginning because of the same fear that I had of everything that I hear about how they treat the community, the gay community. I'm right now in Jalisco, but I I try not to go out and do anything and have a lot of contact with people because I continue to hear stories of how people are getting mugged in the middle of the street just by walking. If you walk funny, if you're dressed differently, if you, you know, just have mannerisms, just anything at all. I am in constant fear of even going, you know, down the street for a soda or just anything. I always try to have someone with me. It's not somewhere where I want to be. I'm, you know, stuck in a place where I don't belong, but I mean, I'm still living in fear. Even right now, it's not a place that it's safe in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Marco. Stacey, do you want to answer the grounds of the lawsuit? Or the grounds of the denial, sorry.
Sure. So, as I said earlier, you know, the Department of State does not give you the facts that are associated with their decision. And so all we have are legal grounds for the denials. And one of these grounds is a statute that we refer to as the permanent bar. And that involves somebody who was here unlawfully for a year or more, who left and who came back in without admission. So they essentially snuck across. And then the other involves somebody who was here unlawfully who then left. And so we have a number of challenges to those grounds, but one of the most important is that when Marco came back, when he was 17, he went down to Mexico during a summer because one of his grandparents died. And when he came back in, he showed his school ID and was allowed to come through. And the case law is very clear that that's what we call an admission, because you're being authorized to enter the U.S. And this was a very common thing that happened at the borders before 2001, before 9/11. And so there's case law that says, okay, this is what we call a wave through, so you are admitted, and so therefore the permanent bar doesn't apply to you. And Marco told the officials about this, but nevertheless they applied this bar. But we also believe that this bar shouldn't apply to somebody who's a minor. So when Marco departed in 2000, he was under 18, and so that's one of the other grounds that we're challenging as well. It's a little bit difficult in this situation, though, because, again, we don't have the factual reasons that are the basis for the decision. We only have the legal statutes that are cited.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your question, Michael. Operator, any other questions?
And as a reminder, it is star and one to ask a question. Your next question comes from Maria Peña with the Opinion. Your line is open.
Yes. Thank you for doing this call. I'm wondering if you could clarify the situation with DACA because, you know, even though he had come through, you know, you said that he was waived through when he came back in 2000, and he was approved for DACA, so apparently that was not an issue then. I'm wondering why, if his DACA was still, you know, in place when he left, you know, recently to Mexico, why was he not allowed to come through with his DACA? And I'm hearing from DHS officials, you know, they won't comment on the case specifically, but they'll say that the provisional waiver is only to let you out of the country, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be allowed back, because the border agents do have discretion, even when you have been granted the waiver. So I'm wondering if Marco or Israel knew that they would be running the risk of not being allowed back in, even though they were granted the waiver. And also, if you could clarify what happened to his DACA if it was still in place. I mean, if he had it renewed or what. I'm wondering what happened to that. And to any of the legal experts there, does this, I know you said that this is not the first lawsuit, but do you think the particulars of this one could set a precedent for other couples that are in the same situation as Israel and Marco? Thank you.
Thank you for your questions, Maria. So let's start. Andy, are you still with us? I'm wondering if you can answer the question.
Yes.
On DACA first. Great.
Right. So, just on what happened to DACA, when Marco left the country, he lost his DACA status. So that's the problem. And I think stepping back from that, we believe, as Stacey was saying earlier, that because his application before he left the country had all of the relevant information, including the information about going to comfort his grandmother and returning back to the U.S. There was no basis, before the provisional waiver was granted, there was no basis for denying that, and the waiver was granted, there was no basis once he got to Mexico for denying him both what he was seeking in terms of residency and also reentry back into the country. That's going to be a key part of the lawsuit. We also believe that this lawsuit, in one sense, it shouldn't be precedent-setting because people who have been wrongfully denied under the immigration laws what they're seeking should be able to go to court and get that erroneous decision turned. And many have. But this is an important decision because it's a case in which both parties to the relationship before Marco left had lawful status in the U.S. And so we think that makes this an even stronger case for review than the cases in which the courts have granted review and overturned wrongful decisions in the past.
Great. Thank you, Andy. Stacey, is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, just a couple of things on that. I think, you know, there's a few things that we're raising in this lawsuit that I think are really important. And again, I am hopeful that we'll be able to get this resolved once somebody looks at this with a really detailed eye. But, you know, Marco had established ties in the U.S. And so when he leaves and goes abroad for consular processing, he doesn't lose all of his rights when he leaves. And so this is an important case to raise that issue in the terms of applying for a visa from Department of State, because there is a general legal doctrine that applies a reduced scrutiny, a reduced look at decisions from the Department of State. And so we do think that this case is important on that ground, because this was not the first time that Marco was coming to the U.S. In fact, he'd lived here since he was a toddler. And the other thing is this issue of applying what we call the permanent bar to minors is a very important issue that does affect, I would say, probably thousands of people who traveled as children and who came back, you know, without admission. Now, we know in Marco's case, he did come back and was waved through. But for any reason the court gets to it, this issue of the bar applying to minors, I think, will have a large impact as well. The other thing I do want to point out is that prior to this administration, when DACA recipients wanted to travel, they could apply for what was called advanced parole. And that would have meant that when they left, they didn't lose their DACA status. So if Marco had gone for his appointment during that old rule, he would have been able to apply for advanced parole. And so even if the visa had been denied, he would have still been able to come back. But of course, that ended, I believe it was in September. Marielena, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
Okay. And so without advanced parole, the DACA status terminates and there's no way to come back to the U.S.
Thank you, Stacey. Yes, Maria, this is Maria Elena. I was going to add, I think one of the things that's significant about this case is that here you have Marco and Israel who did everything that the law required them to do. They followed every single one of the steps, both in terms of Marco applying for DACA when he first did, and then separately going through the provisional waiver process. But because this administration has terminated the DACA program, because in terminating the DACA program, they also ended the ability for someone like Marco to apply for advanced parole, he is now stuck in the wrong country, as you heard from him directly. And so we are committed to making sure that we bring Marco back. That's the reason for this lawsuit, but also wanting to send a message to Congress as well about the importance of making sure that we get the DREAM Act passed so that no one in Marco's situation should ever have to experience this. We don't know if there are other DACA recipients in similar situations that we just have not heard of, and we want to make sure that not only can Marco and Israel be together and for Marco to return back home and for them to live together and have that freedom to not only love who they love, but also to live with the people that they love. And that's what this case is about. Mm-hmm. Operator, do we have any other questions?
And we have no further questions at this time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And just a final thank you to each of our speakers, most importantly to Marco Villada and Israel Cerrato, our courageous plaintiffs, and to our co-counsel, Stacey Tolton, Andy Pincus, and our partners, Sarah Orbello and Criselle Rodriguez, Sarah with the Human Rights Campaign and Criselle Rodriguez with the California Immigrant Youth Justice Alliance. And a final thank you to all of you who joined us today. You can contact Juan Gastelum if you have any questions, want to reach any of the speakers on today's call. And with that, I wish you a great afternoon. Thanks, everybody. And Marco and Israel, thank you again for joining us and for your courage.
Thank you.
Thank you.